Sports Day for Kia. The Kia Sorento, Drive Car of the Year. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello and welcome along to Sports Day. Well, we are, I've got to admit, a little bit flat here at Sports Day because Jessica Fox has just, and I'm talking 10 minutes ago, just missed out on a gold medal, literally, by the skin of her chinny chin chin. Yes, when you see it on the TV, it is just the finest of touches of a post, and the two-second penalty has cost her badly. Yes, she had the fastest time again, but after penalties, she was pushed back to third. So three times now, she has won her way onto the podium for one silver and two bronze. Her father was commentating, and he's going to join us later on in the program. She moves on to the next event, and hopefully the gold that she's dedicated her life to attain. Scoop, Lee Matthews, not far away. Welcome to you.
Thanks, Jared. Yeah, excruciating is probably the word, isn't it? Because she was going to win even with the first penalty. She was going to win all the way through until that tiny little touch. They had to review whether she in fact missed it altogether, which would have been a different penalty itself. But she touched the red marker on her chin. She misses out by that exact penalty in between her and gold. She gets bronze, which we're all proud about, but it was the one thing that she hadn't achieved, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The World Championships, the silver, the bronze in Olympics before.
She had the fastest time by 3 seconds.
Yep.
And when we're saying she just touched it,
oh, wow.
I mean, for everybody who's seen the event, you know that if you just touch it, it moves 4 or 5 centimetres. This thing hardly even moved, but it did move. No, I mean, the snickometer or the edge would have been called in if it had been AFL football.
Yeah, the arc wouldn't have found if it had been touched in about 10 minutes. Hey, yeah. There's plenty of action going on. The Opals are just about to start in 10 minutes. They're against Belgium, of course. You know, huge controversy surrounding their campaign, given that Liz Cambage is not there. And the Matildas, nil all early in the first half against the USA. They would like a positive result to guarantee their way through to the quarters. But because the two best placed third places in the women still get through, they still should.
Any news in football? Did Buddy appeal?
Buddy is appealing right now. It's going live. The AFL arguing that the amount of rotation in the elbow throw meant that he clearly wanted to use force, and then therefore the impact should stay at medium and not be downgraded to low, as the Swans are arguing. But we'll bring you the latest as that comes through at the tribunal.
And any news from the Blues?
Well, we don't know when the review is going to be completed. We think soon. And we hope soon.
Well, the review is 2 weeks away from being completed, but the briefing is happening later on this week, is it not?
Yes.
Any news from the review?
Nothing that I can say solidly.
Nothing you can take to the bank?
How many times are you going to use that?
Let's welcome this bloke.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews in it. Talk about a he-man.
Well, Lee, I've got one question for you. Is there anything in football that you can take to the bank?
Take to the bank. It was a big term. When I was on with you last Tuesday when you said take it to the bank that Alistair Clarkson won't be coaching next year. I think that was it. And I guess until we get to round one next year, Sam, you might be right. You never know. We'll wait and see. But it's interesting.
We're with him all the way, Lee, on this one.
We're with him all the way. But I was just listening to you talking about Jess Fox's situation. And sport, to me, sports are like make-believe emotions. That's what sport's all about. It just creates emotions. And I was just to remind myself, if things were going bad when you were playing footy, you could remind yourself it's only a game. You know, you're losing a lot if you told yourself that. I must say, when I watched Ariane Titmus win a couple of days ago, it was yesterday, wasn't it, really?
I had a tear
in my eye. And to be honest, I don't look at sport that way. But that was really, really emotional. But that was like a tear of joy. I must say, I wasn't watching the Jess Fox. What's just happened? I think the tears might be a bit of tears of sadness on that one. I mean, that is such a fine line in sport, isn't it, really? It's like whether you win a grand final or lose a grand final by a point. I mean, it's such a fine line between winning and losing, and it's heartbreaking sometimes, particularly for the people like really closely involved.
Lines are open, 13 13 32. It's a Harcourt open line. If you want to talk real estate, give them a call. If you want to talk footy, give us a call here, and Lee Matthews will answer your questions. But if you've got a similar moment, the most gut-wrenching moment you've ever had in sport, give us a call, 13 13 32, because that is what Jess Fox is dealing with right now.
Yeah, and pretty amazing, A, that her father, Richard, I mean, she comes from an unbelievably gifted sporting family, is going to commentate it, Jared. I mean, how hard would that have been as a father of daughters to be able to commentate your daughter going for gold? But he's going to join us live in the best part of half an hour, which is great. But we get the chance before that, Jared, to talk a bit of footy with Lee.
Can I ask you, Sam, about this Carlton review? Now, seriously, I know if you actually decide to do the review, the Carlton board say, well, you've got to take notice of the view, but you couldn't, like, you couldn't treat as roll gold fat. I mean, you can't get a handful of people to have a look at your footy club for a few weeks and all of a sudden their views or outcomes or recommendations are all of a sudden like this solid gold, you know, take it to the bank. I mean, it shouldn't work that way. Surely it's information, I guess, and opinions and recommendations for them to consider. But people can't just turn up for 2 or 3 weeks, outsiders, and know exactly what's going on inside a footy club. That's my view.
I think it's a great point, Lee, and I guess I'll make this comparison, Jared and Lee. Luke Sayers has been in business for a long time. I mean, he was head of one of the biggest consulting firms in the country, PwC, up until recently. In those sort of firms, reviews happen all the time when the department in the company pretty much know what they want to do, but they get someone external to come in and do the review for them and then, you know, ratify some of the decisions that they think they need to make. I don't think that's any different in football. I think people at Carlton know pretty well what some of the problems are there, but they wanted to get external people in and see if they agree with them. I'm with you, Lee. I don't think they're going to take the view of three people, albeit three very experienced football people, over the course of 8 weeks to make decisions on the future of their club.
Did you ever partake in a review, Lee, either externally or internally?
Well, internal reviews are happening all the time. So, I mean, that's just a matter of whether you talk about, are you reviewing last week's game or are you reviewing your whole year? I mean, reviews, that's just part of performance, part of groups. You always have to review what you're doing, what you're doing well, what you're not doing. But in terms of external reviews, I mean, apart from, you know, being on a couple of panels looking for a senior coach, and I wouldn't say that's not a review situation, I've got to say I haven't either been part of it as, you know, being reviewed or being part of a group doing the reviewing. No, not externally. Frankly, as I say, I just don't believe in the principle that the external review is going to pop up all kinds of stuff that you didn't think you knew in the first place. As Sam said, it might ratify and give you a reason. Oh, yeah, the review board said we should do this. So, yeah, we followed their recommendations.
Wayne Campbell wrote a really interesting column a couple of weeks ago in the, I think it was the Sunday Age, and he essentially said, you don't have a major review and kick out the boot starter. Now, I thought that was pretty fair assessment, and it begs a question, if you sack 3 or 4 or 5 people, and those 3 or 4 or 5 people have been appointed by the CEO, well, surely his tenure must come under some scrutiny. So you just beg the question, where does this thing start and where does it finish?
So what are you saying there, Jared? So Kane Little, who's relatively new, he's the man really along with Mark Lejudice that sacked Brendan Bolton because they weren't winning enough games. They then appoint David Teague. Kane Little appointed Brad Lloyd, the head of football. Are you saying that if those positions come under fire should as well?
Well, I think if you're the CEO, and you've appointed list manager, you've appointed this bloke, that bloke, etc. Well, then, if all of those guys get tipped out, well, you're under the you have to be under scrutiny.
Well, it's interesting because he's part of the review. I mean, that's what the club said when they announced it. Yeah. Luke Sayers will be assisted by Kane Little.
Yes, he did say that, and I thought that was unusual. But we'll see what happens with it. But it just seems these things can end up being a witch hunt. Now, if the boot starter alone goes, it's not worth having. if you sack one person, it's not worth having. The bloke I can't believe is under scrutiny is Russell, the fitness guy. I think he's got so many credits in the bank, and I suspect he's probably got a pretty handy contract as well that will prevent him from being sacked, but even if they wanted to. But, I mean, if all you're doing is you're punting out your high-performance manager.
I don't think that will happen.
I don't think it'll happen either.
I think in a general principle of a board, I mean, I'm on the board of the Lions, right? Yep. So, and every board is fairly similar. So the board who are not day-to-day people at a footy club, that's not their role. So they appoint the CEO. And the CEO, would appoint the footy manager. The board might be a little bit involved with a football director. Yeah. But nevertheless, the two. And then a senior coach gets selected. So the three in a footy operation. I mean, the CEO might not be directly involved in the footy operation, but the CEO of any footy club is. That just goes without saying. So the CEO, the footy manager, and the senior coach. They're the three main decision makers. I mean, there's a lot of other people involved in a football club now. And I said the same in my view 5 or 6 weeks ago. If the board, the Carlton board, decide to have a review process, they're saying to the CEO and the footy manager, we don't think you're capable of giving us the right feedback. Mm. So we're going to go outside. And now, again, they're virtually saying we can bring people in for 3 or 4 weeks and they'll have a fair better idea what's going on at the footy club than you do, or in fact you're being critiqued, as you should be, along with everyone else that I guess that you could say is as you say, they're not going to stake the boot starter. It's really seeing how things are working. And I still think it comes down CEO, football manager, senior coach. They're the three positions that should be under the most heat.
Lee, can I ask you about Carlton on-field?
Mm-hmm.
When you're watching Patrick Cripps now, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking I can't believe how badly he's aged. 2 years ago, he won a lot of the awards, but he won the Players Association Award, and he was close enough to the best player in the game, and that was 2 years ago. So he was 24 then, 2019. He's now turned 26. Like, he looks like a player who can't really... He's never had much of a leap, I suppose. But he just looks like he's lost his mobility and agility. And he's still probably got his strength, but he just doesn't move the same as he did 2 years ago. So, therefore, he's become like a journeyman. I mean, he was the best player of the game. Now, I don't think he'd be in the All-Australian squad, for instance. So, he just aged so badly. Now, what's happened that I don't know about... Well, that you don't know what you don't know. All I know is when I see him now, he is such a different football athlete than he was 2 years ago.
Are you surprised then, Lee, thinking about that he's been given a 6-year deal by the club?
Well, yeah, right now. But, I mean, the 6-year deal was a couple of months ago. I mean, this has sort of been a gradual degeneration. I mean, that's what my eyes tell me, Jared and Sam. I mean, you watch him too. But that's my look on him. And it's more of it as a football athlete. He's aged badly from 24 to 26. Now, he might have had injuries that we're not aware of. I don't know. All I know is that's the basic look. Doesn't mean he's still not a good player, but he's not the match-winning gun player that he was a couple of years ago.
Wally's been waiting on the line from Wonthaggi. Wally from Wonthaggi, welcome.
G'day, fellas. Just got a quick one for you. What's the purpose of having the 10-metre goal square these days?
It's a good question, point. Lee. What do you think, Lee?
I tell you what the main one is. This is what I use it for. Whenever there is a disputed 15-metre mark distance, I quickly look at the goal scale and say, okay, it's 1.5 of them. Yeah. That gives me my sort of little bit of my benchmark for what is 15 metres. But Wally. As Wally just said, it doesn't really mean, well, if you take a mark within the goal square, you kick it from straight in front, I suppose.
That's the main reason.
That's the only thing it
would
really
would you change just, it back, Lee, as I would?
Change it back to what?
As in you kick the ball from outside of the square for a point.
No, I'm happy enough with the scoring. Say, okay, if you mark it in the goal square, you make it straight in front. Because really, you mark it sort of like a foot inside the goal post, for instance, on the goal line. You want to create an acute angle. So, no, I'm happy with that one, Jared.
I'm talking about the kick out.
We've got Richard Fox coming up, Jess's dad, very soon. So we're going to have to get to a break because the gospel calling to Matthews has been moved forward. It's next.
Well, for those of you just joining us and you're a regular listener to the second hour or the second half hour of the program, you would know that you get your enlightenment, your spiritual nourishment in the second half. We'll have to bring it forward because we've got Jessica Fox's dad about to join us after the 6:30 news. So the Gospel according to Matthews is an early edition, Lee. I hope you're at your very best. When do you preserve and when do you change?
Yeah, when to persevere, when to change. I pop that up every now and again because that is hitting you all the time as a footy club. Now, you always got to remember, who you pick as your 21st, 22nd player can have an effect on what you call your team balance, right? Like, I reckon Melbourne with their 21st, 22nd player have to enhance their ground level pressure.
Yep.
Their defence depends on pressure upfield, so the ball's coming in long and high, right? Now, that to me says, and what's happened with Melbourne the last month or so, Ben Brown's come into the team.
Yep.
Now, I look at that and I say, I don't think Ben Brown or Luke Jackson do enough to play both. And what you do know is it's going to make you slower at ground level. So I ask you the question, and Sam the same, Jared. Which one of Brown or Jackson? Brown is probably more chance of kicking a few goals. Jackson is probably a better second ruckman. But if you've got to say we've got to get a little bit more ground level pressure and getting and chasing and tackling, etc., I reckon the change needs there. And I don't know whether Melbourne have been better with Ben Brown in the team than they were without him in the first half of the season. So it's a dilemma, but I reckon one of them, not two.
Jared? Jackson or Brown?
Right now, I think Jackson's off a little bit. I think he could go back for a spell. I don't think Brown has... He was good on the weekend.
Without kicking straight, yep.
I don't think he's nailed it, but I still think they're almost committed, I think, Lee, for the smaller version of themselves. But at this stage, they've got some challenges. When do you have to work it out by, in your view?
To be honest, every time you play, you might have a slightly different picture. This thought that, well, I will get to September, we'll know what our best team is. Your best team changes because players' form change, injuries, things change from week to week. So the thought is, you might be having this long term, this is going to work for this long term, but you will still have that dilemma picking the 21st and 22nd players when you're getting into playing a grand final. That's the way it happens. Can I go to a Persevere? I'll double down on this one. Mm-hmm. Asava Radigalia. Now, I said about 6 weeks ago when the Persevere and change, just keep playing him. And I reckon Geelong a bit the opposite. They might as well go with their strength and play their big blokes. Like Radigalia, Stanley, Blitzars, play them all because Hawkins and Cameron and Rowan are all pretty agile as well.
Yep.
So I think they're a better team with the big fella, whether he's backing up Ruckman or he's just being the big forward, Radigalia. But he's going to have his bad days, but I think he just creates the difference. And they are, but persevering with him, I think he's going to make Geelong a much better team.
Yeah, it looks like he's on the improve week in, week out. Lee, just on replacements, and you talked about 22nd, 21st man.
The last couple you picked,
Dylan Scheel was probably one of those for Essendon, comes in on after a long break. I think it was his fourth game, maybe in his fifth game for the season. He was okay, had 13 possessions. Are you a fan of bringing players back through the twos, or has the twos become such a non-event competition at the present time that it doesn't give you enough, particularly if you're interstate in hubs?
I think the answer to that is how long they've been out for. Mm. I mean, if they've been out for a couple of months, I think the match practice, even though it might be inferior type match, which is all it is now, it's reserve level, that NEFL's become almost like a match practice competition to a degree. But it's hard to make that decision from the outside. But I think if you can get a game of good, fair income footy against opposition, you know, under their belts, they're going to be better for that.
Lee, the fall from dynasty to battling is a painful one.
I look at Damien Hardwick at the moment. I mean, Alistair Clarkson's already been through this. They've fallen from the dynasty to battling. I mean, they're battling down the bottom of the ladder. It's like climbing Mount Everest. And the dynasty team is when you've won, say, three premierships within a few years of each other. That's probably what a class. Not just winning a premiership. I mean, okay, someone wins a premiership every year. But when you've been as good as Richmond have been, and Alistair and Damien Hardwick, you think we're doing the same things. We're trying to get the same things going, and it's just not happening. It is very, very painful. As I say, Alistair Clarkson may have already gone through that because Hawthorn have dropped off the perch for a few years now. But it is terrible because you kind of think to yourself, you get used to certain things as a coach, and getting certain output from your team. So now I look at Damien Hardwick, and to be honest, you look at a confused man because you don't really know why it's not happening now. Logic might say we just haven't got the same players playing in the same manner, which is obviously goes back to what I always say, Jared, good players make good coaches. But nevertheless, sometimes you kid yourself when you're coaching a dynasty team and think, geez, we're fantastic at what we do. We've got a great system, great style. We do it our way. And all of a sudden, amazing, a few of those players don't play so well or get injured, all of a sudden you fall off the cliff.
And a final reading, Lee, revolves around a ruckman.
I was actually doing the North Melbourne Carlton game Saturday afternoon, and I just saw the score the score sequence of the Suns and the Lions game. Yep. And I went up and watched the second half, and I know what happened in the first half, Jared. I know you were calling the game, but the difference between the teams. But I wanted to talk about McInerney. Now McInerney completely dominated Burgess compared to Saturday night, when Max Gawn completely dominated Tim English. But what McInerney did, I don't know whether he decided to do it or someone told him, go forward, grab the ball. Burgess was a non-event, wasn't he? Because he's a non-ruckman.
He should have stayed on the ground.
It's all you got. I mean, there's no one. Bit like that. Then tackle him, because McInerney hitting it forward. He had his 12 clearances, but they were big clearances. And trouble with Max Gawn, I reckon, when Max dominates, he just tries to still flip it to his ground level players. If you can dominate as a ruckman, get forward, get the field position, get the ball running forward, and McInerney did it brilliantly, and I reckon it's something that even Big Max, who gets the hit-outs all the time, sometimes has to just get some forward footy going from those ruck contests.
More coming up with Lee Matthews, and we're going to speak to Richard Fox, dad of Jess, after her bronze medal only minutes ago.
A sports update for Tyre Power, your trusted tyre experts.
Welcome back to Sports. Richard Fox coming up quickly. Just before that, the Matildas in the USA nil all 36 minutes in. The Opals up against Belgium 4 points behind, 21-17. Kaylee McEwen winning gold in the 100 backstroke. If you're living under a rock today, Mitch Larkin just missed out in the medal in the 100 backstroke. First look at Kyle Chalmers in the 100 freestyle tonight in the heats. Sally Fitzgibbons eliminated in the quarters today. Owen Wright, Olympic bronze. So he becomes Australia's first ever medalist in surfing. Jared, he defeated Gabriel Medina in the bronze playoff. Pretty amazing story, given it wasn't that long ago he had that terrible accident.
Yep.
Had to learn to walk and talk again.
Had
and
a now serious brain injury.
Now he's an Olympic medalist.
Yeah, great performance by him. And much bigger swell than they've had.
Kookaburra smash Argentina 5-2 in their pool match, Jared.
Well, you've already said that the win by Ariane Titmus brought a tear to the eye. Yep. What emotion did you have when you saw Dean Boxall celebrating?
No, well, I must admit, that's like the coach. The coach can't do anything, as we know.
Yeah.
But the emotion that you feel for your team or your athlete, it was just the euphoria that you don't. I found that the euphoria you can get in moments is what sport gives you. That's a lot of things just, you just don't get them in your normal life. And that moment for him.
Yep.
Was one of those over-the-top euphoric moments, and he was out of control, which is great. He didn't do anything that was embarrassing, but you could see the joy and the euphoria in his reactions.
Are you a bit flat? You didn't give more than just a bit of a fist pump when you came down on the ground when the Pies broke the collie wobbles?
Yeah, what more can one do?
A couple of backflips, a couple of shaking the fence.
But those moments, that you remember the moments. A lot of part of it you don't, but I remember that moment when I walked onto the MCG when a couple of minutes to go, we're 8 goals in front in 1990. I mean, and that is just a feeling that you'd love to bottle. And you only get it rarely. And it only lasts for an hour or two, to be honest. But, it's outstanding. That's what sport's all about, really.
Lee, Jared, I've got some breaking news.
Mm-hmm.
I said yesterday I thought they might find a way, Jared, but he's free to play. He's got off his 1 week ban. He escapes with a $3,000 fine. The medium impact downgraded to low.
Well, I've got to say, Lee, based on what I saw on the couch last night, three other incidents that looked awfully similar, I'm not surprised.
Well, even forget the precedent. I mean, just the impact. It's probably a low impact, wasn't it? I mean, that's where this thing about it can create damage.
Yeah.
And it can create more damage, and that's probably the case too. It was lucky that the point of the elbow didn't do a little bit more damage than it actually did.
Jess Fox is now an Olympic jewel, I should say, Olympic bronze medalist. Her father Richard's going to join us next.
An Aussie update for Red Energy. Red Energy is green and gold. For real Aussie energy, switch to Red today.
Welcome back to Sports. Quickly around the ground, still nil all just before halftime between the Matildas and the US. The US having a pretty clear goal denied for offside by VAR. And the Opals currently in front in their first game against Belgium. Just before halftime, they lead 30-25. But all eyes, Jared, just before we went on air, was on the great Jess Fox, who came oh so close to a gold medal. She finished with bronze in the K1.
Yes, and looking close hand was her father, Richard Fox, now standing canoeist in his own right, picked up 10 gold medals in world championships throughout his career. But as a father and as a commentator, he has witnessed a very, very disappointing result for Jess, albeit that she won the bronze. And he joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Richard.
Good evening, all. How's it going?
How are you going, more the point?
Oh, look, yeah, disappointing on the one hand, but incredible on the other, because it was a real fight to the finish. It was a tough course, tough day. We saw that yesterday with the men's canoe final. Dan Watkins made his way through to that final. The heat, the humidity was really in force yesterday. But today, the showdown in the final, Jess was last to start. Ricarda Funk, we know her form. She's one of the fastest in the world. Mm. She put down a good score. Jess chased it hard and made a mistake early on that, you know, was a penalty, and then she lost a bit of time. She fought back incredibly well, and she was in the hunt, but a penalty on the second to last gate. So that's what happens when you're scrambling. But look, I'm incredibly proud of her as a dad, and, you know, as anyone in sport would be when you're in an Olympic final and it's down to the wire. You're the last to start and you're the favourite and the number one. And she still did incredibly well.
No doubt she did. I mean, we are all staggered at just how close that last touch was. But nevertheless, she did touch it, got the penalty. She's finished up with a bronze, which is no mean feat in its own right, as you've articulated. But have you spoken to her directly yourself?
No, not yet, because, you know, you finish, you go through all those processes of, media, mix zone, podium, yep, media again, and all that. I've spoken to Miriam, my wife, the coach, and, yep, look, everyone's hurting from it, but incredibly proud too, because she's had such a great journey, and she inspired, so many of the others out there who were competing too. She took the race to them with a great semi-final run, and in the final she had the speed, she had the edge. But it's a demanding course, and you know, when you're in it trying to chase down a big time, you're on the edge, and the mistakes are costly. And to her credit, she held on and was in it to the end. She's still got an event to go, which is good, and that's the canoe event. So she's in the heats for that tomorrow, and semi-finals and finals on Thursday. So got to kind of pack up the kayak and get out the canoe and get back on it.
Richard, can I ask you a layman's question? You mentioned it being a tough course. I mean, are all the courses, I mean, the man-made courses particularly, they are still different around the world. So they've all got their own unique features, have they?
Yes, absolutely. And there's the water, if you like, the channel, that's one thing. And then there's the course that they set, where the positioning of the gates. And this one, the course design, the way they set the gates, it was a sustained difficulty all the way down and probably building towards the finish. And I think, we saw that through the heats, through the semis. We lost, the world champion went out in the semis. So it's one of those technical sports where it's such a fine line between pushing for time and making a mistake where you're going to get a penalty. And there are 25 gates plus all the features. So, but it's well within her reach and ability, and she showed that through the earlier rounds. And I think, last to start and chasing down a good score, she just slipped up in a couple of places, and that was the difference.
What chances do you give her in the C1s? I think the heats are tomorrow afternoon, Richard.
Yeah, so heats tomorrow should be fine. She'll get back. You've got to get used to kneeling instead of sitting.
Yep.
And then I think, the big thing will be on Thursday, the semi-final through to the final, and it'll be the same thing. Like, as I say, it's a challenging course. And in the canoe, she's got the form to go better than she did today. But you've got to give good respect to the opposition. Some of the women, well, most of the women in the C1 event haven't raced a kayak. So are they fresh, or are they, they don't have the experience of the course? So, but she can go all the way. She knows that. And she's expected to be in the running to do that. But look, anything can happen. And it's just great to be out there and having a crack.
Richard, can I just ask you finally, Jared and I both had our hearts in mouths watching here in the studio before we went on air. I'm assuming we were like most of the country. What's it like for her father watching, given you're expected to commentate at the same time?
Yeah, look, I feel better when I'm in it. So if I'm, you know, talking through a run or involved in the performance, if you like, when I was coaching, it's different. Yeah, look, as she was lining up, how's she feeling? And then as the run unfolds, of course, it's stressful. And but I'm watching what's happening and thinking, how's she going to get out of that? Can she pull it back? And I thought she was still on with it. And the last upstream, that red gate that she clipped, that was the difference. But look, I've been there. I've been the last boat down in Barcelona, and I came fourth. So
yep.
I was a favourite there. That was at the end. But she's still got plenty of racing in her. Of course, it's stressful watching, but you know, we love it too. That's the tension of sport. You can be the best in the world, but it doesn't mean you're the best on the day every time.
No, it doesn't, but we're all still oh so proud of her to win bronze, as I'm sure you are as well, and we wish her the best in the C1. Thanks for coming on. We might touch base with you later in the week, and great stuff on Channel 7.
Yeah. No worries. Thanks very much, guys. All the best.
Richard Fox there, the father of Jess. Lee Matthews is here for McDonald's, and we'll be right back with him after this.
Lee Matthews for McDonald's. The Mac family is here. Free limited edition glass with every medium or large Mac family meal.
And Lee Matthews does join us. Lee, ironically, last night I was going through with Jan Rooney some of the greatest moments in the pool.
Is she going to give us the top seven?
She's going to give us the top seven.
That's big.
And I think for me still, Kieran Perkins in the 1500 is, I think, the greatest race I've ever seen. But that said, I went home last night after the program and I saw the 1500 metre heats. I don't think I've ever seen a more boring event on TV. So in the same event can provide you with your greatest moment and one of the more boring moments.
I find in the Olympics that I look forward to the most to the track and field because you can't see the athletes in the pool, like unless they tell you who's who. You can't see them. They're just figures, obviously, splashing around in the water in a way. But the one that happened yesterday, it's always the most recent batch of euphoria you have. That's the one that's the most special.
Hey, Lee, we've just got time, I think, for one of your late gospels that we didn't get to air. The development process and where that's been for some of the young guns in the competition. We talked about Cripps already, but there's some others that have had their ups and downs.
Well, a few this week. I mean, if you talk this to even the last round, Max King, Matt Rowell and, say, Josh Shackey, all really early draft choices. Now, Josh Shackey was pick one as a forward. Just didn't seem to have the physical, like, or the visible urgency, but then all of a sudden they played him in defence last week, did okay, and Alex Keith is injured. So if ever the Bulldogs need a defender, so Josh Shackin, just at the moment, defenders have to defend occasionally, but mostly they have to be able to attack and use the ball on the way out. So it doesn't go in a straight line. That's the point, Sam. We've got to remember they come from underage footy when they go into the elite level. And you tend to have a reservoir of confidence, and usually it gets knocked around after a period of time. Matt Rowell's a prime example of that. Like, early last year, he was just outstanding the first few games. And now he's had a few injuries, but right at the moment, he's in where his confidence, I'm sure, has taken a bit of a depleting. He's actually getting caught with the ball a fair bit. So he'll work through it because, I think he's an outstanding character. But it's not a straight line. And Max King, well, to do what he did on the weekend is a 202 centimetres. I mean, if you actually, you'd play 200, over 200 centimetre forwards all the time, but most of them can't keep their height. In other words, they get pushed out of the road. He looks like he's got the height. He's got the leap and the leg power. I mean, they'll be trying to stop him leaping. You can imagine at his height and his leap, his hands are about 12 feet up, I reckon. There's no hope of anyone getting up that high. So the book on him will be pretty quick. You've got to make sure that he can't jump at the footy. But the fact is, it's not a straight line. It usually goes in like a bit more like a roller coaster. We'll hope that Josh Shackey, who really has taken it, just looked like he was just going nowhere. He's now got a chance to become a part of a top team's defence with their main big defender, Alex Keith, out.
The Suns are a bit of a team of all of those players at the present time, Lee, given they've got so many of these young kids. I was absolutely staggered at how How big a cliff they fell off at half time on the weekend.
No, I couldn't believe it, where the score was at half time and how they played in the second half. I mean, they were horrible. But Rowell, I said a couple, I reckon Rowell's one you can build your club on, yep, the same as Tuke Miller. Yep. I mean, they've got some good youth, but he's a gun.
Great to have you on. Leave chat next week.
Thanks, guys.
Great Lee Matthews there for McDonald's. Hey, Gian's top seven. I assume the so-called race of the century will be there. 04, Jared, if you remember, it was Thorpedo versus Vandenhoudenband, yep, versus Hackett versus Phelps. Four of the greatest Olympic swimmers that the world has ever seen. Well, I reckon that could be one.
It could be one.
Grant Hackett could be...
We'll find out.
Did you say Perkins or Hackett?
Perkins.
Perkins.
Yeah.
That could be two. We'll find out later in the week.
I remember when Steve Holland won bronze and we were thrilled with that.